Rena Strigel. Welcome to Ag Inspo, the podcast that focuses on innovation and creativity in agriculture. In my travels across the U.S., my mind is blown by the farmers, ranchers, and business owners who are contributing to the richness of the agricultural landscape. My hope is that by sharing their stories, you will be inspired to have the courage to break through and bring an idea you have to life. Hi, everybody, and welcome to Ag Inspo. I am so excited today to be talking to Amanda Severson, who is the owner of Grandview Beef. She has a grass-fed beef operation in Northwest Iowa, and she and her husband have basically built this little business from scratch. And I shouldn't say little business. It's now turned into quite an operation. So without further ado, let's welcome Amanda to the show. Amanda, it's so great to have you on the podcast. Thank you for taking time out of your busy day to just like record this. I heard that you had a pretty busy morning this morning.
We did. We had some cattle out this morning. It was quite the adventure.
You know, of course, in the middle of the first big spring rainstorm, of course, the cows have to decide that it's time to go for a little walk outside of the fences.
Yes, it's not even that they were exploring for new food. I think they just wanted to go for a joyride and get out and about. So it was an exciting morning, to say the least. I got my workout.
That's awesome. Well, we've sort of alluded to the fact that you have cattle. So why don't you tell the listeners just a little bit about yourself and your operation?
Sure. Well, my name is Amanda Severson, and my husband and I raise 100% grass-fed cattle, and we live in Wright County, Iowa. Clarion is the town that we live in, and I have kind of an interesting story of how I got here. I am not from agriculture background at all. In fact, I'm pretty much the furthest thing from it. When I was young, I tried to stay as far away as possible from horses and cows and everything else. And so for me to end up running a cattle business is not exactly what I expected for my life. But I had a dream. So I grew up in Washington State, and I had a dream for my entire life. I was going to work in athletics, and I was going to work for the Seattle Seahawks. That's all I wanted. And when I graduated from college, that is the job that I got. So I got an internship with the Seahawks, and I thought, great, I've made it. My life is done. I can ride this out forever and follow my dream. But then I met my husband, Newt. So he changed everything. He was also interning for the Seahawks. And he thought he wanted to work in athletics as well. But when he had spent the summer in Seattle, he realized this really wasn't for him. And he was feeling called to move back to his family's Century Farm in Iowa. By the time that he had felt called and was moving back to Iowa, we had been dating, but realized that this was not going to work. We weren't going to do distance, and I had no desire to be in agriculture. I didn't even know where Iowa was, to be honest with you. And he had no desire to stay in Seattle. So we pretty much chalked it up as a loss and went our separate ways. But my internship with the Seahawks ended, and I needed another job. And I applied for jobs all over the country and got an interview in Des Moines, Iowa.
Oh my gosh.
And I felt like if that wasn't a sign, I didn't know what was. And God couldn't have slapped me across the face any harder and told me that I needed to at least give it a try. So in February of 2016, I flew out to Iowa for the first time. Let me just tell you, maybe don't pick your first trip to Iowa in February. Freezing, absolutely freezing here compared to Washington. But I interviewed for the job, and while I was here, Newt introduced me to his family, and he showed me this Century family farm he had grown up on, and I was just enamored by it. I had felt like I lumped agriculture all into this big bucket of simple way of life. You just put something in the ground, and it's been that way for hundreds of years. How hard could it be? And to actually come out here and experience it, I realized it is one of the most complicated industries in the entire world. And that for I pride myself on being pretty book smart, but I realized very quickly that I was not very farm smart at all. And it was a humbling experience to see how hard everybody was working, and I just became totally enamored by the idea of this lifestyle. and had so much more respect when I left than I did beforehand. So I accepted the job and I moved to Iowa. And the job, it didn't last very long, but it was enough to keep me around for Newt to put a ring on my finger and convinced me to stay. And while I was navigating my move and deciding that I was going to be in Iowa, Newt had been thinking about how could he move back to his family's farm and add value. I think a lot of people are really interested in moving back to their family farm, but then they realize there's not enough income to go around. They're really going to have to diversify or add value in some way if they want to participate. And that was very evident in Newt's case. So his dad had had a cow-calf operation for about 25 years, and they had raised these animals in such a great, unique way, and then just took them to the sale barn and got regular market price for them. So Newt, when he was in Seattle, saw this beef going for crazy amounts per pound and thought, wow, well, our beef tastes better than that. Why can't we do that? Why can't we not be so reliant upon commodity markets and actually set our own price? So while I was figuring out my life in Iowa, he was kind of starting to think about maybe we could sell beef to the end consumer and get more money for it. And we were both very entrepreneurial, so I, of course, kind of nosied my way into that and really wanted to be a part of this beef operation that he was starting. So while we were still dating, we started Grandview Beef in 2017, and that was the beginning of our journey into agriculture.
Excellent. Okay, so I have to ask the question before we get into the beef. What was the job that brought you to Iowa?
Yes. So it was ladies professional golf and it was the Solheim Cup.
Sure. So
when I interviewed for ladies professional golf, they were headquartered in Daytona Beach, Florida. So that I just assumed that's where I would be going for the job. And then on my second phone call, they said, no, actually it's in Iowa because there's this special event that we're putting on there and it only ever happens once. So I felt like I was even trying not to be in Iowa. I was interviewing to go to Florida and I still somehow got Iowa. So it was even more of a sign. But yes, the Solheim Cup was how I got here. And it was very fun to work on that event.
Yeah, I actually lived in a house that was right behind that golf course. So got to see all the crazy activity to organize that. You guys did great, by the way. No traffic disruption the entire time. You were awesome. So good job.
Oh, good. I'm happy to hear that because I was just going to say, I'm so sorry for all the disruption.
Not at all. We did not have a single disruption and I literally lived right behind that golf course. So you did great.
Great. Well, it was a great event. It was great for the state of Iowa. And a wonderful way for me to be introduced to the community here, to meet so many great business leaders. And Suku Radia was the chair of that entire event. And so he was one of the first people I met when I moved here. And to feel so welcomed by someone so important in the community was just icing on the cake. It made me completely change my perspective of Iowa and what I thought I was moving into.
Yeah, no, that's awesome. So now we fast forward a little bit. So now you've gone from professional sports to raising beef cattle.
Yes.
So talk a little bit about, you know, Newt was really thinking about value addition. You were probably like really quickly trying to figure out like what is an operation that raises beef even look like? So what did you come up with in terms of value add to Newt's family farm?
Sure. So we initially thought that we would go down this route of really premium quality corn-fed raised beef that we could sell to restaurants. And that was the start of the idea. And my dad happens to work for Sysco Food Services. So I had a lot of experience with certified Angus beef and trying to get that on menus through Sysco. But the more that we looked into it, we just kind of felt like that market was really crowded. And his family's farm didn't really lend itself to doing a feedlot raised cattle. When we were in Washington and where I had grown up, it was very much a healthy foods, local food movement. But we weren't sure if that was to Iowa yet. But the meat that we were seeing at the farmers markets that were so expensive in Washington, it was all grass-fed, not corn-fed. So when we started, we thought, okay, we have all these assumptions about what people want, and we need to validate something so we know what we're going to go into. And we raised some corn-fed beef, and we raised some grass-fed beef, and we took it to the farmers market. And we assumed corn-fed would sell better, but grass-fed was a much higher price for the customer to have to pay because it's much more costly to raise. And we were very surprised to see our grass-fed was selling faster. And the responses we were getting from people in Iowa that were so excited to finally see a local grass-fed product just completely validated an assumption for us that we needed to move into the grass-fed market and that's where we should be. And we also didn't feel like grass-fed was really going to take off in the restaurants here. So we knew let's focus on people, on direct-to-consumer people in their homes that want to feed their families good, high-quality, pasture-raised beef.
Awesome. So you've now made that switch. So talk a little bit about your operation today.
So making the switch to grass-fed, it seems, when you say it out loud, like a pretty simple switch, but it was the scariest thing that we've ever done for our business because it went from being pretty low input costs and, you know, a year or so where we had risk where cattle were alive on foot that we owned, to then being extremely high input costs and needing to keep these cattle in our care for 2 years to get them to the right weight. So we were doubling our production timeline. We were more than doubling our expenses that we were putting into it and the resources we needed. And we still were just hopeful that people were going to keep buying it and that we'd be able to find more and more people that were interested in it. So making the actual switch and making those personal investments into our farm was really scary.
Yeah.
Newt and I were newly married and we were purchasing land. And we were taking land that was row crop acres traditionally in some of the best farming ground in Iowa, and we were converting it into pasture. And our neighbors were looking at us like we were crazy. So the switch itself was very terrifying. But now we've had just solely 100% grass-fed for the last 2 years and have been blown away by the support we've received from the community and the way that it's taken off for us.
Very good. So are you co-producing with your in-laws, or are you completely separate from them at this point?
So we do co-produce with them. One of the things that I think is really great about our operation and the way that we started this all is my in-laws, Newt's parents, were very clear with us from the beginning that they wanted to do everything they could to help us, but they couldn't give us stuff for free. It just, there was not room in their operation in order to hand us land or to give us free cattle. And so they wanted to partner with us, but we were going to have to pay them the same market price like everybody else was. Mm-hmm. And setting those expectations in the beginning was very good for us. And now Newt and I look back and know that we've built this business on our own, and it makes us feel even that much more confident.
Yeah.
So with that being said, Newt's parents still do the cow-calf operation. So they raise all the calves, and then we buy the steers from them every year. So all of the steers come over to our operation in November, and then we raise them for another 2 years and fatten them to their final harvest weight. And then we do processing with the USDA processor, and then we sell directly to the end consumer. So we rely upon his parents for the calves, and then we take it from there.
Very good. I know you do some sort of unique things in terms of how you handle the cattle for the 2 years that you have them. I thought that was incredibly interesting. So talk about that a little bit.
Yes. So we're a little old-fashioned around here. When Newt's parents started the cow-calf operation, his dad had worked for the Budweiser Clydesdales and had trained draft horses. And so when he started his operation, he really loved using draft horses and quarter horses to work around the cattle and found it to be much easier to work with them with horses rather than equipment like tractors. So for as long as he's been doing this, he goes out with a draft horse team in the wintertime and feeds the cattle off the back of a sled. And then anytime we need to move the cattle from pasture to pasture or across a different piece of land, we use quarter horses. And so we continue that in our operation. And we don't have our own horses yet. That is an area we need to expand. But we borrow his parents' horses when we need to move, and they always help us. And we really focus on trying to limit machinery around the animal. Why that matters in the first place is that the lower stress level that you can keep an animal at, the better. Animals are just like humans in that when we're really stressed out, we tense up. Or if you think about after a really hard workout, all our muscles are tight because we have that lactic acid buildup in our muscles. Cattle are the exact same way. So if they're constantly stressed or they're feeling pushed or rushed, then they're really tense and tight. And that can result in then when you process the animal into beef, more tough meat that's gristly and it doesn't have as much flavor because that animal has been contracting its muscles for so much of its life. So if we can keep them calm and relaxed and always moving at a really slow pace and focusing on using other animals around them rather than machinery, we can keep that stress level low. And we think that the quality and the texture of our beef is that much better because of it.
That's excellent. That's excellent. Yeah, I think it's really fun to see the sort of resurgence of horses in our ranching operations. I've noticed that, but I found that really interesting, particularly in Iowa, you know, both that you've converted, you know, high producing cropland into pasture, which I'm sure your neighbors really thought you and your husband were insane. But yes. Then also that you've got the horses as a way of working your cattle. So talk a little bit in the 2 years, what does your herd size look like today?
Sure. So when we started that first year that we were trying to validate assumptions, we had 5 animals. And then since then, we've tried to grow every year. One of our biggest fears was that we would raise these animals because, you know, you have to commit 2 years in advance to how many steers you're buying. So you're estimating what your demand is going to be 2 years in advance. So we've always been really nervous that we've had too many cattle that we've bought in 2 years prior, and then we've always sold out and needed more. So it's a learning curve. But right now what it looks like is we had 30 head of cattle for 2019-2020 that will be ready to harvest. Mm-hmm. So 10 of those have already been harvested and are in freezers or families' homes right now. And then we have 20 more that will get us through most of the season. And then we increased to 48. So we have 48 calves right now that are growing that in another year will be ready.
Mm-hmm.
So. And we're thinking we'll stay at 48 a year for now.
Yeah.
If my husband was here, he'd say, no, let's grow bigger.
So, you know, being 100% grass-fed, that probably means you do need more pasture. You need more ability to produce the feed for the winter.
Mm-hmm.
So what are you producing all of that yourself, or are you partnering with others to be able to provide, you know, good quality feed through the wintertime? Like, how did you problem solve that?
Yeah, that's by far one of our biggest challenges. And we have 40 acres that we converted. This year, it's established enough, because last year it was still establishing, but this year that pasture is established enough that we're able to rotationally graze it. So we will rotationally graze in 2-acre paddocks. over the summertime, which is really going to maximize the amount of feed that each steer gets while providing us with more resources and not having to go out and buy more land. So the rotationally grazing is really going to help us, but then we also have to do a combination of other things. So we rent some land. We also do a custom grazing rental with his parents. If we run out of pasture, they have extra sometimes, so we'll custom graze through there. We produce some of our own hay, but we have to buy most of it. Mm-hmm. That's definitely an area that we would love to change. We'd love to produce our own because you have so much more control over the quality, but we just don't have enough land right now.
Yeah.
And we don't have enough capital to keep buying land, especially not in Wright County where it's going for, you know, $8,000 to $10,000 an acre. So we have to work with different partners on the hay, and that's been a learning experience. We just have to focus on getting samples, sending it into Iowa State to check on the quality of it, and making sure that it's going to be what we need for our cattle.
So mm-hmm. Excellent.
We have to find many different ways to get enough grass and hay and pasture for the summer, but we've been able to do it so far. That's the why I say we should stick to 48 each year for a while.
So I know that you've got your beef not only direct to consumer, but you're also going through the Hy-Vee grocery store in Ames. Mm-hmm. Talk a little bit about how you navigated that to be able to get your product into a grocery store, because I know for some people who have been doing a lot of farmers markets and maybe are wanting to increase their production, I know that that's one thing that people get a little bit nervous about is like, how do you approach a grocery store? What does that look like? Talk a little bit about that, because I know we've got a lot of listeners who are probably thinking like, wow, how could we get off the farmer market and into a chain like Hy-Vee?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would love to take credit for the fact that we sought out the grocery store idea initially and that we thought it would be good for us, but we actually didn't want to be in grocery stores, and we were just focusing on that farmer's market and direct to consumer when a grocery store in Clear Lake approached us. It's a specialty health food store. The name of it is Simply Nourished, and she approached us and said, I want to carry your products in my store. I think they'll sell really well. And we had to go back and do our research and find out, okay, so how much do we discount that? And can we still make money if we discount it? And what type of rules do we put in place? Do we have all the right legal requirements? All of that. So she approached us. And then what we found is over the last couple years, all of a sudden we had steady income every month because this grocery store was reordering. And it was so nice to not have to be out there marketing our beef constantly and just have these checks coming in because somebody was reordering. And we thought we should really try and expand that so that we can put less of our own labor into it and we can have these stores promote it for us. So we didn't have enough beef at the time in order to approach more stores. So we had been waiting until this year to approach more. And we finally got enough product and we just walked into Hy-Vee and said, we think that this is something that your customers would really like. We showed them some numbers. So how many pounds we sell at their Ames Farmers Market, how much it's going for, what type of following we have on social media, to try and show them there's already people here in your town that will buy this, mm-hmm. that come into your store. So we started with that and they were somewhat interested. And then my husband just kept going back and calling until they said, okay, fine. We'll take 30 pounds to try it. So it really is about just getting your foot in the door and going in and not being afraid and finding the right person to talk to. You might find a manager and they may start to listen and then say, actually, I don't deal with meat at all. You need to go talk to this guy. But eventually you're going to get to the spot where you need to be, and then you can tell your story and hopefully get them to order.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think the key once you get them to order is you really need to make sure that you're promoting it to your customers and you're getting your customers in the store to prove that it was effective. Mm-hmm. Because that store has now taken a risk on you and you want to make sure that they see a return and people are going into the store and buying it.
Excellent. That may be something that people aren't really familiar with, is that even a chain store like Hy-Vee does have some local decision-making authority in terms of some of the products that they can put in the store.
Yes.
So I think that that's definitely something for people to be aware of, that they don't have to go directly to the big corporate buyers, which are housed in Des Moines, but they can actually just go in and talk to somebody at the local level.
Yes. We initially approached the bigger buyers, and we learned that lesson too, where they said, you don't have enough product for us to roll this out to every store. You're not big enough for that. But if you want to talk to stores at the local level, then they may be interested in carrying you, and it's entirely up to them. Also have the ability to do some unique marketing stuff. So you can help provide them with marketing materials to help sell your product in the store.
Excellent. So how, you know, just for people who are curious, were they hard negotiators? Did they really try to make it so that it wasn't a win-win? Or did you feel like they were really fair and looking to support you as much as you were trying to give them a product that would support them?
Yeah, it wasn't a negotiation at all. And I thought it might end up being that way, but it wasn't. So we had done our research really well with that initial store and set a price that we were comfortable with. To sell a wholesale price, specifically on our ground beef. So we don't have enough filet mignons to have our filets in Hy-Vee. They'd sell out way too quickly. So we focus on ground beef for now until we can get bigger. And when we went into Hy-Vee, we already had that wholesale price on a sheet for them. And we said, this is the price to you. We retail it at $7 per pound. We don't want you to charge less than $7 per pound, but you can charge more if you want to. That's up to you. So we know to set that minimum price of $7 so there's consistency for our customers. We certainly don't want them to get our beef cheaper at Hy-Vee than at our online store. So we set that, and then Hy-Vee made a decision based upon the demand and a specialty product that they felt like they could set that price even higher for their customers.
So talk a little bit too about how you're putting your product out to market other than the Hy-Vee store. Are you still doing your farmer's market circuit?
Yes. So we focus on the Clear Lake and the Ames farmer's markets. And we plan to do those again this year, assuming that the markets move forward with the latest developments in the virus and things. We certainly are trying not to be dependent upon the farmers markets for that very reason. So we know that there's a potential our farmers markets could get canceled for at least half the summer. So try not to be dependent upon it, but we would like to be at Clear Lake and Ames for this season again. Mm-hmm. We love the farmers markets because it's the best way to test your products, and you get honest feedback from people, and there's just no better way to get in front of your customers. Mm-hmm. So it'd be really hard to walk away from the farmers markets right now.
Yeah. So what are some things that you find that consumers are particularly concerned about? Like, what do you learn about them at the farmers market?
We learned that there is a lack of knowledge around grass-fed production in general. So there are some consumers that are nervous that what they're buying isn't grass-fed, and they want to know for certain that it is. So how can we validate to them that it really is grass-fed? And we're able to educate them on all the guidelines and rules that we have to follow through the USDA in order to even make that claim. And then there's a lot of consumers that are trying to make a switch in their diets. That's been huge. We thought our biggest customer base would be millennials that were interested in kind of that healthy lifestyle. Our biggest customer base is people that are 55 and over. And they've lived in Iowa their whole lives, and they've eaten corn-fed beef their whole lives, but their doctor just told them, if you want to keep eating meat, you have to switch to grass-fed. And so we're meeting a huge need for that more elderly market, which we weren't expecting to do at all.
Mm-hmm. And I know that you've also got the ability to for people to order online. They don't have to drive to Clear Lake or to go to the store in Ames to be able to get your product. So you've got an online store. And do you sell everything that you produce through the online store, or are there just, is it a limited product offering that you have via the website?
We sell everything that we have in stock online, and we can ship that to anywhere in Iowa and Minnesota. So we launched online shipping on our website in January of this year, and it was a huge learning experience to try and figure out how to ship perishable products and dry ice and packaging, everything else. So we're still learning and trying to make sure that we're doing this in the best way possible. Some of the biggest concerns that we had initially were we didn't want this to be bad for the environment. So we needed boxes that could be sent back to us and recycled. And then we also didn't want to lose money. I think a lot of people can look at operations like ours and think it's a really fun hobby, but we really need to make money to survive. So we needed to make sure we were actually charging a shipping cost that was going to cover our cost that we had into it, so we weren't losing all this money that we didn't realize. We'd love to expand the shipping to other states, and we do plan to do that to other Midwest states, but I kind of alluded to it earlier when I talked about Hy-Vee and just doing ground beef for now. We have an issue of selling out every year. And the last thing I want to do is expand our shipping into Illinois and Chicago and then not have our customers here in Iowa not be able to buy the products that they love.
Mm-hmm. That may be something that people are kind of perplexed about. Like, why just two states?
Yes. So the two states are, after a lot of research, first of all, we realized pretty quickly we weren't big enough to be using shipping companies like FedEx and UPS. So we looked at more local providers. We might be able to use FedEx and UPS in the future when we have more consistent shipments. So we know that, you know, every Monday we have 50 shipments going out. Then we could contract with them. For now, we're too small, so we needed to use local shipping providers. And we wanted, for that reason, to stay within Iowa and Minnesota. Because we're on the northern side of Iowa and we do so much in the Clear Lake markets, we do have a lot of Minnesota customers that are coming just over the border or from Minneapolis. So it made the most sense to have Minnesota be that second state. I'll say by far, all of our orders, for the most part, come from the state of Iowa still right now.
Awesome. That's it. That's a lot. You know, I think that, like, when people look at things, they just think, oh, it's easy to ship, it's easy to do this, it's easy to do that. And, you know, it really highlights how complex doing something that would seem so simple from the outside actually is when you know, put in all the variables.
Well, and it sounded simple to us as well when we thought about it. And when we first researched shipping, it was about a year and a half ago. And we thought it can't be that hard because other people are doing it. And then we learned that it was really difficult, and the people that were doing it were much bigger than us and had been around for a lot longer. So we looked into some classes we could take, and those classes were $1,500 to $2,000, and we don't have that type of cash laying around. And so we didn't feel like that was a good investment. And we kind of tabled it and said, okay, by January 2020, if we can at least ship to Iowa, then we'll be going somewhere. And then we gave ourselves a whole year to figure out the logistics of it all.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, this has turned into, you know, a lot of complexity to put a product out in terms of, but talk a little bit about, you know, the conversations of getting into that, you know, piggybacking off of an established relationship with Newt's mother and father. We all know that generational transition of farms is really emotional. It's really hard. So how, it sounds like the conversations were really easy and straightforward, and everybody just kind of like sat down and had a business meeting. But talk a little bit about, like, some of the things that maybe you were prepared to talk about when you got into that conversation. How did you approach them? you know, and kind of just talk about that, because I think that this is one of the things, you know, particularly people who want to get into farming or, you know, come back home, find some of these conversations really, really hard to have. So talk about how you and Newt prepared to have that conversation with his parents.
Well, I would start by saying that we were really, really blessed in who Newt's parents are and how smart they are when it comes to succession planning. And so they've attended a lot of seminars and workshops and things to learn how to set clear expectations. Newt is not the only child. There's other siblings involved. And so they did a lot of foundational work early on with all of the siblings so that none of those siblings ever assumed that they'd just be able to come back and get free land or anything in return. So that foundation work that they've done over the last, you know, 20 years, that's all to their credit. I think for Newt and I, we just tried to approach it like it was a business plan and not a family operation. And so we made our own LLC and we were completely separate from them. And we did our own financials and we showed them those financials to try and help validate why they should sell us their calves. So we never came to them as mom and dad, will you help? But more, this is our business idea. Here's why we think it's really great. Here's how it's going to benefit you. Are you interested? With that being said, there's always with families, smaller things. And there was lots of little conversations along the way that we've had to rely on them for help. And it hasn't always been the easiest. So we couldn't afford a livestock trailer. We still don't have our own livestock trailer and we need to borrow his dad's. How we pay his dad for that, maybe it's through labor that Newt is giving back to their farm. Maybe it's a bottle of scotch. it's all about negotiation, right? But we did have to rely on them to be able to use some of their equipment early on, and we still do. And it's just constantly reminding ourselves that we are not entitled to that and that they're giving up hours on their equipment and their equipment is going to have a shorter life because of that. So we need to provide value back to them. Mm-hmm. I think that's just been the most important part. But like I said, just so lucky to have the relationships that we do, because otherwise it'd be much more difficult.
So, you know, as far as ongoing communication goes, in terms of how you know, have these two operations that now, you know, are very much connected to each other, you sit down and have kind of business meetings with each other? Do you have communication just as you need to? Are you and Newt going over and providing help on that side, especially during calving, knowing that some of those calves are going to end up with you? Talk a little bit about that relationship and how you've worked that out on the business side.
Sure. So Newt records his hours and has a logbook so that if he's doing work over on their operation, he records those hours that he's worked, and we just try and remember what we've put into it. Similarly, when we use equipment, like when we're doing hay production, we'll pay for that equipment or we'll record how many hours we're doing that. There's a lot of times where lines blur and things don't get recorded. For example, when the cattle were out this morning, his dad did not start a timer and say, okay, I helped you for this many hours to get your cattle back in. He gave us a hard time, which he had every right to do. And if his cattle were out, we'd go over and do the same thing. They do most of the calving on their own. Every once in a while, Newt will do a night check or help out if they need. But we really do try as much as possible to keep those lines separate so that it's the cow-calf operation and then it's the fattening operation, and they're both different legal entities.
Very good. Very good. So what have you enjoyed the most about this lifestyle that you have chosen, given that you wanted nothing to do with horses and you wanted nothing to do with any kind of ag and you didn't even know where Iowa was? What have you found that you have enjoyed the most about your journey so far?
I think it's the lifestyle it provides. And Newt and I were talking about that this morning as we prepped for talking with you today. I was trying to think of what the biggest sacrifice has been by doing this. And my answer was lifestyle. And then what's my favorite part of this? And my answer is lifestyle. So it's a catch 22 because I realized when I moved here and we started this that we were giving up a lot of things. We both still have full-time jobs. There's no way that we could make this work if we didn't. So those jobs provide a really solid income that many other people our age would take to go buy anything that they wanted to. They could go build a new house or do a kitchen remodel without thinking about it. They could go on a long vacation. But those are things that Newt and I aren't going to do because we take all that extra income and we put it back into the farm. So we've made really big sacrifices in the way that we're choosing to live our life. But in the same respect, there's nothing more special or more beautiful about coming home to your farm that you own and that you work hard on every day. And I tell him all the time that I didn't know what tired felt like until I moved to the farm. And there's something so rewarding about actually getting in at night and feeling exhausted because you know you worked as hard as you possibly could and that you deserve that sleep that night. Mm-hmm. So it's just such a special lifestyle that you have when you're on a farm. And you just are reminded not to take anything for granted and to enjoy the simple things that are around you.
Yeah. So what have you both chosen to do for outside work? Because I know even sometimes that can be really problematic to move to a rural area and to be able to find off-farm work that actually lines up with sort of your talents and what your education is all about. So what have you both found to do off the farm?
So I work at Iowa State University and I do work in Ames. So typically I'm driving to Ames 5 days a week. And working there on campus. With the recent COVID and everything that's happened, I am not having to drive, which is a nice change. but I know that that's short-lived. So yeah, so I work at Iowa State, and my role there is we have an executive MBA program that's specific to people who work in food and agriculture. And we help develop the next leaders for larger ag companies, also large farming operations, and some of the smaller state agriculture companies. And I coordinate that program and recruit for that program. So it's been a really fun way for me to still be in agriculture, even though it's my off-farm job. And I absolutely get personal benefit from being involved in that program and being in agriculture. The wonderful connections that I make with the professionals that are working in those industries is really special. Yeah. So it's a great job for me. And then my husband is a Pioneer seed salesman.
Perfect.
Yes. So, and that's funny. That's a funny one to explain to some people because it's selling corn and we raise grass-fed cattle. And a lot of people think you probably can't do both. But we really believe in are passionate about the fact that there's room for everybody in agriculture and all forms of agriculture are important. We know that we can't feed the world with our grass-fed beef. We don't have the resources. I mean, as you can see, we can't even feed the state of Iowa without running out. So we need for those major ag producers and we need those commodity markets to still exist. So it's a really nice balance to have him working in that typical row crop production, but then still be able to run the grass-fed beef business.
Absolutely. That's amazing. That's really neat, actually. You've been able to find so many things that are synergistic to that. So, you know, for people who are listening and maybe there's some that are thinking, maybe I wish I could go back to my family farm, or I wish I could maybe diversify the operation I have. What would be some advice that you might give as someone who has done that, who has gone back to a family farm and also diversified? What would you give us some advice for people who are maybe thinking about it but are not quite sure how to do it, or maybe are a bit afraid to try something new?
I think, first of all, and we've kind of already talked about it, but having really clear expectations with the farm that you're moving back to. So what is their specialty? What are they really good at? And then how can you add more value to that? And if there isn't room for you to add more value in that specific area, so if they're doing traditional row crop acres and you're not sure that you can really add value there, is there something else that you could grow or something else that you could do to utilize those resources that your family has developed and to add value back? And so setting clear expectations with your family and knowing what you can and can't add, and then really thinking about what you're passionate about and what you care about, because this is not something that we go into to make millions of dollars. I've never met a farmer who decided to go into agriculture because they wanted to be a millionaire. This is something you do because you're passionate about it and it gets you excited to wake up every morning. So thinking about what could you do on your family farm that you would be excited about? Not that your family necessarily would, but that you personally are passionate about and are skilled in and want to do for potentially the rest of your life.
Mm-hmm. Does Newt have other siblings that are involved in his parents' operation?
So he has two siblings, and one lives here in Iowa. She's not currently involved in the operation, but there's plans for the future. And then he also has another sibling, a brother in Nashville. And he's definitely actively involved in conversations about the farm and things, but also not currently back here at the farm. So, and again, we all have talked about, you know, how can each of us bring that value back in different ways. And so Newt and I have done this beef side, but I mean, maybe we need a locker and then maybe somebody could run that side, or maybe it's some sort of experience that we're offering to our customers and someone else could run that part of it. Maybe we need more calves, and so they start to do a bigger cow-calf operation. There's lots of opportunities here as long as somebody's willing to move back and think about where their passions can help on the farm.
That's really awesome that the family as a whole has the mindset of inclusivity, meaning, you know, that whoever wants to come home, it's just a matter of figuring out how we provide value, because the space is there, but perhaps the operation just doesn't have the ability to financially support them without something new being developed. So I think that's amazing that your family is just in the mindset of that and is kind of welcoming everybody to come home.
Mm-hmm. And I think one thing I would add there too that might be helpful to people that are thinking about this is, one of the ways that his siblings have gotten involved, even though they aren't actively living here on the farm, is there's a lot of beginning farmers programs. And so with those beginning farmers programs, if you show a history of being involved in a farming operation for so many years, you're entitled to farm loans and operational loans with lower interest rates as a beginning farmer. And so they have started to make investments into the farm that they can show history here on the farm. And then when they're ready to come back, if they want to purchase new land or they want to purchase something and they need that funding, they now qualify because they have some history on the farm and they can take advantage of the beginning farmers program. So if there's somebody out there that's thinking, I want to move back, but now is not exactly the right time, I think maybe in 2 to 3 years, look at ways that they can invest in back into their farming operation financially right now. And then there might be opportunity there for them to get some funding when they move back at a lower interest rate.
That's awesome. It's awesome advice. Lots of creativity about how the two of you have approached both the opportunity, conversations with your family, conversations with your consumers. It sounds like you guys just take a really measured approach to how you're going to do it, and you're not just winging it and hoping that it all works out.
Well, I think we learn from our mistakes, right? So when we do wing it, we see it doesn't always go so smoothly. It's much better to have a plan. And we've certainly learned from our mistakes. I think one of the things that Newt and I did really early on that we always try and tell people about is we would come home at the end of the day and we'd start to have a conversation in the kitchen, and it would go from how was your day to I need to buy $20,000 worth of hay for next year. And then everything would just, the mood would just switch because it got to business and it was so scary and stressful. And you were talking about big sums of money. So we stopped that now. We have a rule and it has to be talked about in the office because we're business partners in the office and we don't let everything else with the family and with our personal lives get involved. And if we want to talk about money or we want to talk about the business, we have to move it to the office first because we learned that the hard way.
I think that's such a great, you know, that's such a great life lesson learned very early. Since I work in succession planning, I find that a lot of the families that I work with do not have sort of those zones where we've drawn boundaries around how and when we talk about the business. And so the business sort of becomes all pervasive, which leaves very little room for sort of connecting as a family or connecting with your spouse or connecting with your kids, because that business kind of sits right smack in the middle of that family conversation all the time. Mm-hmm. So I think that's really amazing that the two of you have learned that so quickly and have kind of created a way that you deal with that.
Well, it didn't feel quick to us in the amount of time, but yeah, it's been a huge blessing. And now when we give any talks on entrepreneurship or startup or how we run our business, we always try and talk about that rule because I think it saves so much hurt. And that's not to say, I mean, we also talked about how you have to be passionate about this, right? And so for Newt and I, when we go on a date night, guaranteed after a couple glasses of wine, we're talking like our biggest possible dreams of Grandview Beef and thinking about how far we can take this. And it definitely goes to business, but those are the fun conversations of the big dreams and the excitement behind your entrepreneurial spirit. As soon as it shifts into how our operating budget actually is going, we save that one for the office.
That sounds healthy to me. Yeah. That's awesome. That's awesome. So, you know, just and in wrapping this up, if people want to, especially if they're in Minnesota and Iowa, and they want you to ship some product, mm-hmm. just how do people follow you, find you, connect with you? Just tell our listeners.
Sure. So you can go to our website, which is grandviewbeef.com. And that's where you can find all our products that we have available to be shipped directly to your door. And you can also do on-farm pickup there. So if you're more in our local area and you don't want to pay for shipping, then you can just select on-farm pickup and come out to our farm. We also do beef shares, so quarters, halves, and wholes for people that like to stock their freezers. And we have those available in July of this year. So people just shoot us an email from our website and we'll get you on our list for that. You can also find us at some different grocery stores. So we mentioned the Hy-Vee's and Ames, and then also Simply Nourished in Clear Lake, the health food store, and Louie's Meats, which is also in Clear Lake. We're expanding those offerings. So hopefully there'll be even more by the time this goes live. And then trying to think if I'm missing anything else. Oh, social media. So we love to share our story on social media and we think it's a great way for people to learn about agriculture if they don't have a background in it. So please follow us on Instagram and you will hopefully be amused by our content. If you were checking it today, you would see me running around in sweatpants while we tried to get our cattle in. So it's a great way to see what's going on the farm every day and to learn a little bit more about us and feel really connected to the place that you're actually buying your meat from.
That's amazing. So for those of you who might be, you know, driving around or, you know, getting ready to get those tractors in the field, don't freak out. We're going to have all of this, all of the connections to get to Amanda and Newt in the show notes. All you need to do is just click on the thumbnail. It'll open up the show notes and you'll be able to link directly to them. So, you know, please don't, you know, crash anything trying to write stuff down. We've got that all typed up for you already. It's just right there for you. And Amanda, you know, just sincerely appreciate you taking time out of your day today to just have a chat with us and share all the amazing things that are happening in your operation. I think it's super exciting and it's going to be amazing to watch to see what happens to you, Newt, and all of those happy, healthy, grass-fed steers over the next couple of years.
Well, thank you so much. And thank you for inviting me. I think it's great what you're doing here and showcasing some of the different sides of agriculture and some of the more niche products that are out there. I think it's really great that you're taking the time to highlight those. So thank you for investing your time into doing the podcast.
You're welcome. I appreciate so much. And we'll talk to you soon.
Okay.
This is Rena Strigel, and you have been listening to Ag Inspo, the podcast. Please visit my website at tomorrowiscoming.com and find me on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. If you haven't yet, please go to iTunes and subscribe, rate, and review this podcast. Join me next week for another inspirational episode where you will hear from another amazing entrepreneur who has had the courage to break through and bring an idea to life.